But 18 months later, that army turned against Baghdad. And the invasion of Baghdad, the capture of Iraq, is again another stunning military achievement. The Mongol army is again operating far from its base. It's an army based on the steppes. And yet it moves into the irrigated and urbanized regions of Iraq, puts the city under siege, and captures it and sacks it with absolutely ruthless ferocity. And to be sure, some of these reports are exaggerated, but the accounts that come down to us is that the city is destroyed. It's burned to the ground. The population is marched out onto the plain of Iraq, divided into three groups, men, women, children. Everyone's beheaded. Three great pyramids of skulls are piled up, and the Mongol army celebrates the great victory. The only community not destroyed, and this again plays to the Christian notions, is a small Nestorian church, because one of the wives of Hulagu is a Nestorian and kind of likes her, and that small Christian community is spared. And this, of course, is yet more indications that the Mongols are on the Christian side. Well, as in the case of both the invasion of Batu and Hulagu, the reason these armies didn't continue west and destroy the Christians is that on both occasions they got news that the great Khan had died, and they had to withdraw into Central Asia to participate in the rather complicated election. This was true with Batu in 1241, and it was again true with Hulagu, who in 1260 pulled out. And it was these the lesser forces left by Hulagu, which were defeated by the Mamluk sultans at Hain Jalut in 1260, which was the victory that gave the Mamluks so much credit. One could debate how significant that victory really was. But in any case, after 1260, the Mongol fury was spent in the West. The Mongols never really did return to gather up the Western conquests. Well, the Western Europeans had very peculiar reactions to it. The Muslim world was pretty clear. These guys were the worst enemies the Islamic world ever had. Baghdad had been destroyed. The lands of the Eastern Caliphate had been ravaged. Every major caravan city, you know, Herat, Samarkand, Bukhara, Merv, they were all torched, in several cases destroyed on two occasions by Mongol armies. And on the other hand, the Western Europeans saw that, well, we have an ally. And this generated a rather peculiar set of correspondences, which I wish to conclude this lecture, that again reveals a great deal about Crusader attitudes on these wars and on the Mongols and the importance of Jerusalem, as well as gives us some insight on what the Mongols must have thought about these Western Europeans. We know that in 1244, I mentioned that these group of Turks who had been relocated from Khorasan to the Al Jazeera, in 1244, these Turkish tribal forces seized the city of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem had been received back under treaty in 1229, and so it ended this brief restoration of Christian control, and they destroyed Jerusalem and Bethlehem. Well, that led to the preaching of what became known as the Seventh Crusade, and there were several missions that were sent out in anticipation of a great offensive to recapture Jerusalem. One was headed up by a Franciscan friar sent by Pope Innocent IV. His name was John del Caprini, and he gives us a remarkable account. He actually crossed the steppes 3,000 miles under Mongol safe conduct, got to the Mongol capital, which is now out in eastern Mongolia, Karakorum, and there he actually witnessed the investment of one of the great Khans, Kululjuk, who was a grandson of Genghis Khan, and brought with him all sorts of letters and hopes for an alliance, as well as a missionary component. And the Khan looked at this, you know, very curiously, said, "Oh, thank you. Now that you're among my slaves of the earth, we'll be glad. Just do what I tell you and shut up." And, you know, Caprini is very baffled by all of this. And it becomes quite clear that the great Khan simply sees these Christian powers as really on the fringe. And whenever they make these efforts at correspondence, the Mongols have no problem of signing treaties. It's simply, well, you're submitting, so we won't destroy you, and therefore do our will. They're also absolutely astonished that the Mongol court, there's an enormous toleration of different religions. And this is part of a policy that the Mongols actually adopted from the Chinese, as well as their own pragmatism, that the great Khans were usually shamanists. They believed in the ancestral spirits. The shamans were always smoking hashish and going up on the mystical ladder to the other world. There were Nestorian Christians. There were Muslims. There are captives and slaves from all over the Eurasia there as well. And so when Caprini returns to Innocent, he gives a really rather depressing report. At the same time, Louis IX, who's arrived in Cyprus and is equipping his Seventh Crusade to attack Egypt, he's sending out his own missions, and he's being encouraged by Nestorian monks who are in the area, in the vicinity. He sends two of them out, both of them, again, headed up by friars, or hope that they convert them to Christianity.